You have probably heard of some animals referred to as ecosystem engineers, creatures other than humans that change the land around them. Beavers quickly come to mind with their dam building and stream diverting. But cougars? Yes, cougars or pumas or mountain lions or whatever your choice is to call the big cats. Recently published research makes the case for cougars as ecosystem engineers in the Yellowstone area of Wyoming, and we have the researchers with us to explain. Dr. Mark Elbrock is the Puma Program Director for Panthera, the global wildcat conservation organization. Mark, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, and thanks for having us.
Yeah, sure. Josh Barry's with us as well. He's a graduate researcher for Panthera, which again is the wildcat conservation organization. Josh, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Mark, start us off with what Panthera is all about.
Oh, gosh. Panthera is a nonprofit, and we're a science-based conservation program for wildcats all around the world. So we're actually spread across the globe in terms of staff and projects and focus. And everything we do is about conserving wildcats and, importantly, the habitats that support them.
Now, I noticed that among the big cats listed on Panthera's website that there are animals that have greater concerns attached to them than puma or cougars or mountain lions in the American West. Are they in pretty good shape? Is that what we're to draw from this?
That's a good point, yes. So certainly tigers and African lions in particular are in real trouble right now. And there's very few left in the wild, whereas mountain lions in the western United States are doing well. In fact, I think it's one of the most remarkable conservation stories of the last 100 years that we tried our best to eradicate them. We tried to poison them, hunt them down, bounty hunt them, everything. And then remarkably, when provided minimal protection, they bounce back with a resilience that I don't think anyone expected and are doing quite well in the West.
That is fairly impressive then, isn't it? The way because as you point out, not a whole lot of protection for them.
True, true.
Let's ask about what you were seeking with this particular research in the Yellowstone area.
Sure. Why don't I lay the sort of larger narrative, and then Josh can fill in the details as he was the one who actually conducted the work in the field.
Okay.
Yep. You know, one of the things we've been particularly interested in is sort of the larger ecological roles that mountain lions play in ecosystems. And we know a lot about mountain lions. And and when we look at what we could know about mountain lions, we know so little. And that's because most of the focus of what we've studied around mountain lions has been related to state management objectives. So how many deer and elk do they kill? And how many can we kill and still sustain a population on the landscape so that the state agencies are, maintaining a population for the public trust? And so those have been the main research objectives for 50 years across the West, over and over again, studied again and again and again. How many deer and elk do they kill? How many can we harvest and still have a population? And much of the remaining ecology of mountain lions has been ignored. And so we were actually interested in starting to include some of those other questions. And we, like in many states where we are required to go and count how many deer and elk they kill because of our research permits, and we thought, well, gosh, what can we do simultaneously to expand what we're doing in the field? And so it was really easy to start looking at things around the kill sites. We're already going there to count how many deer and elk they kill. And so why not ask questions while we're there? And carrion, which is dead meat, in recent times in research has really come to the top as an incredibly important resource on the landscape, and that just by the presence of dead meat, chunks of dead meat on the landscape, you increase the health of ecosystems and you increase the resilience, which is the ability to bounce back after a disaster or a drought or a fire or a disease. For an ecosystem to bounce back after something like that increases dramatically when you have big pieces of dead meat on the landscape. So we thought, gosh, this is clearly a place that we can look at the role of mountain lions. And that has resulted in a sort of a suite of questions that we began to ask in different research focuses. We've already shown that the amount of birds and mammals that feed on mountain lion kills is a greater diversity of birds and mammals that feed on any other kind of carrion around the world, which is incredible. Just that alone is incredible. And then we've been looking at how it influences the soil and the plant communities and all this other stuff. And, of course, one of our avenues was looking at invertebrates. And here I'd like to turn it over to Josh.
Yeah, and so I took that classic ecosystem engineer concept that we were talking about with beavers, and you know, I applied that to mountain lions. And essentially what I looked at was how mountain lions are providing carrion for beetle communities in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem. And what we ended up finding was over the course of, you know, 6 months of visiting these carcasses that mountain lions left behind on the landscape, we found that mountain lions have this super large effect on the beetle communities. In fact, we ended up collecting a little over 24,000 individual beetles belonging to 215 individual species. And when you start to research into these species, you find that it's amazing because some of them are there to reproduce at the carcass. Some of them are eating fur, skin. You know, they'll raise their larval young there. They'll seek refuge from predators. They'll use that carcass to disperse to the next one. We even found at our carcasses, we found a bunch of snails because snails like soil moisture, which is, you know, the carcass will release fluids and stuff. And we ended up finding beetles that specifically feed on snails. So you can see that beetles are coming to these carcasses for all sorts of reasons, sometimes even 6 months after the carcass was placed there by the mountain lion. And so that was the biggest takeaway I found.
Let me bring our listeners back in to understand what we're talking about here. We're talking about cougars as ecosystem engineers in the Yellowstone ecosystem because they kill deer and elk and they leave the carcasses there. And the carcasses then become homes to beetles. So that's how we got to beetles. We're talking to Josh Barry, the graduate researcher for Panthera, the Global Wildcat Conservation Organization, and Dr. Mark Elbrock, who is the PUM Program Director for Panthera. Questions and comments from you are welcome. If you're wondering how all these things tie together, join us at 800-838-3760 by phone or email 800-JX@JeffNet.org. So, Josh, the number of beetles you mentioned, 215 species, is that an unusually high number for an area, or is this pretty typical?
Well, the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem does have pretty high diversity with all sorts of life. I think there was research in the past that has shown that the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem does have high diversity for beetles as well. So it is high, but at the same time, what's impressive is you got to wonder if the presence of predators such as mountain lions and even wolves, if that contributes to the high diversity of beetles, because like mountain lions, what we found was they're providing these carcasses over time and through space at the perfect moment when the beetles need this.
I'm glad you mentioned wolves, because I did want to ask this question, because we have the standing belief that that wolves changed the stream banks in the Yellowstone once that they came back in there, because they drove the ungulates away from the stream banks, and willows grew and all that stuff. And there's apparently been some resistance to that research. And I just wonder if Yellowstone was a choice for research, Mark Elbrock, for that reason, or just because it's a place where you got lots of mountain lions.
We conducted the research there because it was ongoing research on mountain lions in Yellowstone. So we've been working there just north of Jackson, Wyoming, since 2000. And we just sort of added on additional questions as we continued that work. And originally that work was specifically to look at the response of mountain lions as wolves invaded or sort of recolonized south of Yellowstone, which we work more next to Grand Teton National Park and in the surrounding national forests. And so we were looking for the influence of wolves on mountain lions, and we tried to get ahead of them by moving south out of Yellowstone, where they were released in 95 and 96. Certainly that research, which you're referring to, the sort of trophic cascades of mm-hmm. wolves, as people have been more critical of it, there's been contentious debate over whether there's strong support for it or weak support. And definitely some of the key points seem to have been left out in the early reporting of the research. But we didn't follow up because of work in Yellowstone, to answer your question specifically.
Okay, so you're trying to actually stay away from wolves.
Yeah, one of the things we would emphasize, though, and this is kind of cool, is that a lot of research, including our own on birds and mammals feeding on carcasses, as well as Josh's work on beetles feeding, you know, what beetle communities are present on these carcasses, has shown the importance of large chunks of dead meat versus small. And wolves tend to dismantle prey and spread it on the landscape, whereas mountain lions tend to maintain an intact carcass unless it is scavenged upon by something like a bear or coyotes or wolves themselves. And so these large pieces of meat that are dropped by mountain lions are actually ecologically more important than the smaller chunks of meat deposited by wolves. And so their ecological value is arguably higher.
So, Josh, are the beetles living on these large chunks then? Is that the habitat they're moving into?
Yeah, so they kind of treat it like a... It's very... So the research we're doing is kind of similar to island biogeography, where you'll have a landscape and they'll travel to these islands of carcasses and they'll use those islands to transport to another. So they'll use these carcasses, and yeah, some of them will live there for a short period of time, but the resources don't last forever, so they have to take advantage of it while they can. And like I said before, some of them will use it to seek refuge from predators, you know, hiding in the crevices of the carcass to stay away from other predators, and then they'll move on to the next carcass.
Again, our guests are Josh Barry and Mark Elbrock from Panthera, the Global Wildcat Conservation Organization. They're talking about cougars, mountain lions, as ecosystem engineers in the Yellowstone area. You can join us at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. So Josh, you mentioned habitat for the beetles. So, I mean, what kinds of other critters that would feed on beetles are also showing up? I assume there are some.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially birds. I mean, we would also set up cameras at the carcasses, and, you know, sometimes we would set up cameras after I'd set up the insect collecting traps, and you would find birds would be, you know, hanging out around the carcass, and if they heard a beetle walk into my trap, it would make like a kind of a loud noise, and then the birds would fly down and try to pick them off. Bears would come and try to eat the beetles as well. There's at least a dozen times where I came back to a carcass and a bear had just eaten everything that I set up and, you know, destroyed everything. So we have to redo that. But yeah, pretty much anything that doesn't eat just, you know, vegetation.
So when we talk about ecosystem engineering, I mean, this is not like a beaver level sort of reorganization of the landscape, but I mean, is it a physically noticeable thing to human eyes?
Mark, if you want to go with that one.
It's a good question. I would say that most people overlook this particular ecosystem engineering. But I would say that it is a large effect. So one of the things that we did and that Josh led is that we statistically actually looked at the impact itself. And so we said, is it a small effect or is it a large effect? And that sounds like just general English, but there's actually mathematics associated with small versus medium versus very large effects. And we can measure the size of the effect. And the presence of these carcasses was providing a large to very large effect on the beetle communities, meaning that there's just way more beetles and way more kinds of beetles in the areas around these carcasses than in areas without carcasses. And so the effect itself is large and, you know, could be compared to some of these other dramatic ecosystem engineers. But because we're humans and we overlook small scuttling things, I think we've been overlooking it. And, you know, it is important to emphasize, too, that these beetles are providing these essential roles for us. They clean up the landscapes, they're recycling nutrients and providing it for plants and animals again. And that without beetles, you know, it would be messy out there. We'd be wading through dead food all the time. So, you know, that even though we are overlooking it, it is an important service that these beetles are providing.
To get right down to the brass tacks, they do clean off the bones, don't they? Isn't that a lot of what the beetles do?
Oh, yeah. They'll clean it. They clean it all. You have specific beetles feeding on specific parts of these carcasses. So some specialize just on the fur and skin, and others just on the meat and different types of meat. And, I mean, it's incredible. And maybe Josh can speak to that because he really got excited about the diversity of natural history represented on a single carcass.
Yeah, 215 species. That's a lot of beetles.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest takeaway I took was, you know, some of these beetles aren't even coming to the carcass to eat the flesh, which is what we would all expect. But, some of the beetles we collected would come to the carcass 5 to 6 months after the mountain lion has left. And they're there specifically just to eat fur. And some of them will even eat like other flies, and then they'll have their larvae on the carcass, and then their larvae will eat fly larvae. So there's this huge, huge community occurring, and there's competition, and they're trying to outcompete other, you know, types of species like bot flies and, you know, all kinds of sorts of things. So there's a lot of stuff going on there.
Truly. So, Mark, I read that you're going even deeper still. You're studying soil chemistry around the carcasses, too?
Yeah, that's sort of our next step. Is we have a graduate student at Washington State University named Michelle Pedgel, and we've been tracking 179 carcasses through time. We track each carcass for 2 years, and every 3 months we get a soil sample beneath the carcass and then nearby, and we're looking at, you know, the how things like nitrogen and phosphorus are deposited into the soil. And then we're linking that with the vegetation communities around these carcasses. And then we're trying to see, ultimately, whether these carcasses create these rich hot spots of sort of grasses and forbs that are actually healthier than grasses and forbs, you know, further away. And that in turn brings back elk and deer to the exact same areas to be hunted again. So it begins the whole cycle all over again. So you get these sort of hot spots on the landscape where there's just more nutrients because of the cycle of killing, which brings in, ironically, elk and deer to feed again, to be killed again.
To the same place. I mean, we're talking the carcasses dropped there, and the carcasses got nutrients into the soil, and then that grew the stuff that the deer want to come back and visit.
Exactly. Very circular. Just picture circles in your mind that the cat keeps coming back to the same little, you know, area on the landscape to hunt elk and deer.
Wow, there's a lot to take in here. It's a really fascinating bit of research. It's published in the November 30th issue of the journal Oecologia. It's called Pumas as Ecosystem Engineers. Ungulate carcasses support beetle assemblages in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem. The work of our guests, Josh Barry, graduate researcher for Panthera, the Global Wildcat Conservation Organization, and Dr. Mark Elbrock, who's the Puma Program Director for Panthera. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good to have you.